Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love.
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Chris O'Shea and Michael McCarthy sitting in for Drew Tignanelli. We wish you good evening. And Mike, I was going to make the comment, it's just a throwaway cheap joke, but if Drew listens to this in the future, he'll appreciate it. It takes two Irishmen to make an Italian.
Sure.
Or to pitch in for the Italian.
Oh, yeah, two Irishmen for one Italian. That's the trade today.
Yeah, it is. So Drew will be back next week. But we're here tonight, and we're excited to be here. We've got an open show, so people can call. We have a specific topic, though. So if people are calling, 410-922-6680, we're just suggesting that you keep it to the topic that we're on. So we're going to be talking about personal finance. And interest rates and how it relates to that. So, again, if you want to call, you can certainly do that. But we're going to open up a few topics here, and then maybe that will just cue some questions that people have. So why don't you just start us off?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're listening to WCBM, you're probably also hearing other news outlets, and interest rates are just a huge topic right now. You know, brief recap is recently the Federal Reserve lowered the interest rate for the first time since for quite some time, only a quarter of a point, while the president and others and the interest rate market themselves really is pointing the fact that it should be much lower. And then so interest rates have been a huge topic, and everyone is seeing the effect of interest rates and the effect of the markets. But what we thought would be interesting today is to talk about how do interest rates and interest rates changes, how do they relate to your personal finance? How do you relate it to your life?
Right. I mean, we know, of course, you know, headlines are blaring today with what happened in the bond market and the stock market. One outlet that I saw talk about a bloodbath. So, I mean,
fear and greed, right, Chris?
It is. It comes back to the same thing. Market was down 3%. It was down 3% a week ago Monday. It did the same thing. Markets have been volatile since January of 2018. They've got these up and down moves. And so May was a down month. You've got July is a great month. So, yes, there's a lot of volatility, and so we're not going to ignore that. We know that that's there, but we're going to be talking on the practical side because when interest rates drop, a lot of people's debt is triggered, is tied to that.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So it's a very practical piece to what's going on. On the longer end, you got people refinancing mortgages, and that activity is strong, and so we're going to really talk into a lot of that. So,
yeah, so at a high level, you know, we kind of break it down into a few things. You know, interest rate changes are affecting the economy and the markets. When we have lower interest rates, companies and individuals are happy to spend more. They're spending more freely. They're speeding up our economy and causing our markets helping to affect our markets to raise. It's definitely the biggest thing that you hear mostly talked about, and we'll certainly talk about it tonight, is mortgage rates. You know, not just what it costs to get a new mortgage, but whether you refinance or even, you know, what's the effect on the home buying market for as interest rates go up and down? I mean, one of the things I've thought is really interesting is that millennial home ownership is 8% lower than Generation X, just the previous generation at the same ages.
Right. So it's certainly mortgage brokers that we talk to, they're as busy now as they've ever been. Mm. So people who didn't get on the last wave down of a few years ago, or even, you know, because this year rates popped back up. And so that did have a dampening effect on people, you know, on refinances. And so we're seeing that now, though, that people are doing it. They're refinancing, and we think that's a good idea.
Yeah, and with the talk of interest rates going a little further down in the future, at least that's what the expectations are, I think that's going to become a much bigger topic over the next couple months. But, you know, spending is the biggest part of GDP, and GDP is one of the biggest drivers of the economy. It's really one of the key indicators that we should always look at when we're talking about the markets. And, you know, capital spending is what drives that, and capital spending is often, you know, driven by those interest rates as well. But, you know, products like the cost of cars are affected, the volume of selling cars. And then I think something that's been tough over the past 15 years, 10, 15 years, is, you know, fixed income investors, especially retirees, you know, trying to live on more conservative investments. You know, interest rates when
yeah.
they're down, it's bad for them.
And they're the forgotten forgotten class in many ways. Are those people living on fixed incomes, or people looking for a conservative rate of return on their money? Is what are the fixed income markets doing? I mean, it wasn't that long ago you're getting 6% on money markets. You know, I remember. CD rates, you could go out and you could get 6.5-7% CDs. And now people are saying, okay, I was at zero almost, my bank account. So we've been encouraging people over the last several years to go to online banks because there you're getting one point not too long ago, you're getting 2.5% on companies like My Savings Direct or Ally or Capital One 360 or some of these is at least getting something. But for many people, the big banks are giving you nothing. And so people have been going out on the risk curve to try to get more return. They're buying stocks with dividends or just buying equities in general just to get some kind of rate of return. And so it really has been something that has just changed in this, again, the last 10 years. And so people are now wondering, okay, what's going on? Rates are starting to go down. Market's flashing something today to say that rates could go down even further. And so that is a chance. Why are we so high compared to the rest of the world? Well, our economies are structurally more sound than Europe for sure. And there are things going on in Japan. But still, there's, you know, our rates are low. And on the short end, the market's being told, Federal Reserve's telling, the market's telling the Federal Reserve that you should be lowering rates. Some people think 50 to 75 basis points. If that happens, then rates tied to that, home equity loans, will also tick downward. So anyway, we've got a bunch of things to talk about. If you want to call and get on the show to ask us a question after the break, we encourage you to do that. 410-936-6680. And for now, we're going to give a service to all those people out on the road listening to us. We're going to go to traffic. So take it away, traffic.
This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate. Are you looking for a professional financial advisor that you can trust and help you through all stages of life? Having a team of comprehensive personal financial advisors and CPAs gives us the ability to help you prepare your tax return, strategize to help you minimize tax liability, help you visualize and reach your retirement goals, and help guide you in every other facet of personal financial planning. We demonstrate these abilities every Wednesday night on our radio show, Money, Riches, and Wealth. Have you been wanting a second opinion? Then consider our trademark service, the Financial Physical. We guarantee if you don't come away from your Financial Physical with a sense of immense value, then there will be absolutely no charge. Call 410-823-7283 to speak with me and the team of comprehensive personal financial advisors and CPAs. That is 410-823-SAVE or go online to financialphysical.com. That's financialphysical.com.
Standing in the shadows of love, I'm getting ready for the heartaches to come. Can't you see me standing in the shadows of love?
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we are back. Chris O'Shea here with Michael McCarthy. And we are filling in for Drew Tignanelli, who's away. He will be back next week. And if you want to get on the line and call us, certainly do that to ask a question, 410-922-6680. That's 410-922-6680. We're talking about personal finance. And as we were going to the break, we're talking about Federal Reserve and interest rates and that topic alone of, well, what's going on with the Federal Reserve?
Yeah, Chris, I was thinking it probably would be helpful to give everybody just kind of an idea of what is the Federal Reserve trying to do? Why don't they just raise interest rates? If the market wanted a 50 basis point move instead of a 25, why not just give it to them?
Sure. Yeah, well, it opens up the topic that a lot of people are really losing faith. Investors, professional investors, the investment community, Wall Street, is losing faith in the Federal Reserve's behavior. And so because in December, you'd already had several hikes during the year, you had a stock market that was really tanking, and they came out anyway in December and said, okay, we're raising rates anyway, another quarter point, and you know, we're just going to go from there. We're going to keep it on autopilot, and then market cracked a little further down, and then they turned on a dime and said, wait a minute, you know, we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to take a wait-and-see policy, and then they wait 7 months to say that then they reduce rates, but they changed their wording as to what's driving their decisions. And so...
Yeah, well, the Federal Reserve, the reason they just don't go hog wild all the time is because they want to mitigate market growth. Not mitigate market growth. They want to mitigate inflation. And they had been sitting at their 2.0, arbitrarily chosen, perfect number of inflation. So from their seat, you know, it didn't seem to have a lot of reason to push them to drive interest rates down to further
grow
the market.
They're trying to normalize. Let's get us off of zero. We had this 10-year experiment of 0% interest rates. Let's go back to normalcy. You got an economy that's growing. And so that's just – it's the cost of money. And so as the economy is growing, then the cost of money should be going up, supply and demand. And so, right, it's not a the thing that was curious is the December move. Why did they have to increase at that point in time? Because they knew that it was going to be, okay, we have to return to normalcy, but how do you do that? And so it's most of what happens. It's the signals that they send. Markets don't like to be surprised. They just don't like to be surprised. Now, the individual, you know, again, people like the fact that they're going to get a higher rate of interest on savings accounts. And they know in that, well, then it's going to cost more to borrow also, home equity loans. But most people, I thought, had refinanced at that point in time. But obviously, there's a whole batch of people that had not. So anyhow, and now we're on the cusp of, okay, well, what's happening now? The market's trying to signal that you need to decrease short-term rates by maybe 50 basis points, or maybe even more. So it's a wait-and-see type of thing.
Yeah, I could probably talk about the Federal Reserve for a long time. I think Jerome Powell's an interesting guy. He's done a lot of stuff. He's had a couple firsts as a Federal Reserve chairman, the first person to give a interview, I believe, while sitting in office. And I think that may lead into some of what you talked about. But trying to pull this back to, you know, how is it affecting personal finance? You know, I think mortgages is obviously the number one topic everybody always goes to when they're talking about interest rates. And as you've said, you know, short term, probably looking at some lower interest rates, you know, probably looking at another big push to refinance. But it's important that, you know, listeners understand that just because the interest rate is lower, it's not always the best idea to refinance because there's fees involved in refinancing.
Sure.
So you really have to look at that. You also have to look at the fact that when you do this refinance, are you going to push the term of your mortgage out further? Are you going to do a new 30-year mortgage? You know, erase the benefit that you're, you know, the 5 years you'd already ticked off the thing.
The big question is, how long will you be in the house?
Yeah.
Between now and in the future, if you're going to refinance, because you're going to save some money per month. So will the amount of money that you save justify the refinancing costs? Yeah, you're going to get some escrow back for taxes and all. You basically get a 1 month bump. You know, you don't have to pay your mortgage, but you also though have to determine how long you're going to be in the house.
Yeah,
and certainly, you know, in the old topic people used to do about the adjustable rates, people got burned with those. You know, to do adjustable rates are always comes with risk, and we think, well, why are you going to take risk on your home?
Well, especially if you feel like our interest rates are at, you know, not at today, but maybe, you know, in a few months from now or at some point in the future, if interest rates are going to be, you know, much lower than they have been in the past, you kind of want to lock that in. The other thing, I guess, to consider around those mortgages is, you know, the amount of interest that the average family is going to pay on their mortgage is thousands and tens of thousands of dollars. You know, my wife will shop around for diaper prices when we were in the diaper stage, which we still are with our second child. But, you know, people sometimes will just go to the first person they know, the first person they've heard of about a mortgage and not shop it around. And there is some limitations to doing that, but there's a couple different categories of shopping for mortgages you want to do. You know, shop a broker, shop your local bank, maybe shop a credit union. So definitely make sure you shop that around. The other topic around mortgages and refinance, you know, I brought this up to you the other day. Shel Silverstein wrote a book called The Giving Tree.
Right.
And there was a gentleman Drew used to have on the radio show a number of times, Tim Donahue, who's not in the area right now, I don't believe. But Anyway, he used to counsel people on this Giving Tree concept. And if you haven't heard of the book, it's a children's book, and there's a tree that loves a boy, and every time the boy needs something, the tree carves it from herself and gives it to the boy. It's somewhat actually, interestingly enough, a controversial children's book, because I guess there's a number of ways you could look at this tree carving from itself to give to the boy. But the way that it relates to a mortgage is sometimes people get into trouble or they get stuck. And they go to that mortgage and they do a refinance and they get some cash out, or they lower their payment and they extend it another 5 years. And, you know, sometimes that's a really good decision to make looking at the whole picture. But if 5 years later, whatever led you to where you were that you needed to do that, you're there again, you go and you hit it again and you go and you hit it again. And at the end of the book, The Giving Tree, the tree is nothing but a stump. And the problem is, if you get to the end of your story, and your home is nothing but a stump because it's still fully mortgaged and you're heading into retirement, for some people, that can be a problem.
Sure. And that's, you know, we look at folks, and one of the things that we oftentimes tell people is you should have a home equity line of credit. Don't ever use it, but you should have a home equity line of credit because it can be a tool in the future based on things that you do, especially if you're in transition, you're going to buy another house and you haven't sold yours yet. This can really help you in that. But we don't say it to folks who have a temptation and who actually use the home equity line to pay off credit cards, and then they run the credit cards back up. So it's you know, everybody has to decide and really be honest with themselves is, okay, can I really handle this well? And if you're going to refinance to use the cash on something else, something disposable, then, you know, we don't encourage that. Short-term things, sometimes you have to do things, but on a long-term basis, you want to do things. I mean, it gets back to the old adage of you want to spend less than you make and do it for a long time. That's just good for personal finance. I mean, some things are just don't need to be any more complicated than that. But clearly, you know, for some people, 30 years or 15 years. Well, you know, 30 years, you paid a lot of interest. But if you can do a 15-year, well, do it. And then if you can pay back sooner, then don't get a 10-year, you know, versus a 15-year. To get to 15-year, if you need to pay it back faster than that, then you can do that. Some people want to be debt-free. You can do the same thing on a 30-year. So,
and for each person, you know, advice is going to be different. That's why it's so important to know, have someone to talk to about this kind of stuff. You know, Drew's got a saying that he's famous for is, if you pay a 30-year mortgage off in 15 years, no one's going to do anything to you. But if you try to pay the 15-year mortgage off in 30 years, it may not go well.
Good point. Good point. On that topic, we are going to take a break again. We're going to try to help those people out on the highways and byways, and we're going to go to this great traffic update, and we'll be back right after that.
Back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Okay, all right, we are back. This is Chris O'Shea with Michael McCarthy, and we're here for the remaining time here until 7 o'clock, and we're talking personal finance. And if you want to call in to ask a question about personal finance, we're talking specifically about, you know, household finance, the things that affect your household. And so, you know, it's different than that. We're not talking about estate planning and retirement planning and taxation and investments and that sort of thing. We're talking the next subject we're going to get into after a little bit here. We're going to finish up on mortgages is debt, just debt in general, and especially if you're, you know, having issues with debt. So go ahead, Mike. We'll open up to you.
Yeah, so as we were finishing up talking about mortgages, I think the last thing we were, you know, wanted to kind of cover is, you know, a lot of people have, you know, should I have a mortgage in retirement? It's a question on a lot of people's minds. And I think the answer can vary person by person. I think the easiest thing to consider when you're deciding whether or not it's appropriate for someone to have a mortgage in their retirement is, one, is it even an option not to, but obviously. But the other one is really the balance of where they're where their income is going to come from in retirement. Are they really, really rich on annuities? And when I say annuities, I don't necessarily just the ones that are sold by insurance agents.
Yeah, specifically name.
Yeah, I mean pensions and Social Security.
Things that are going to pay you every month.
Annuity type payment, right?
Things that are paying you every month for the rest of your life.
You know, if you have that known level of income, a mortgage in retirement isn't that big of a deal because you have this known source of income and you have this known you know, expense that you're going to have. It's not that big of a deal. But if you're relying on your assets alone and you're going to – the question is, do I pull, you know, money from those assets to – do I pull money from those assets to pay down a mortgage, or do I leave them in, or is it better to have – you know, if a mortgage is 5.5%, it's a guaranteed 5.5% negative return.
Yeah.
Or positive return without it. So,
yeah, what's your cash getting in advance of that? Is all your money invested? Some people, when the market was going hot and heavy, people would borrow and then invest the money in the stock market. And it's like, well, we're not advocating that.
Yeah.
You know, for some, in the days of inflation, housing prices were, you know, you talk about in the 70s, you know, 60s and 70s, it made sense to have a big mortgage, right? Because as inflation happened, you were paying down your mortgage with increasing dollars, so the value of your mortgage was decreasing relative to the cash that you were earning,
sure.
And so it's conversely true is that if you're going to a deflationary time, in which we've been doing for a long period of time now, having a big mortgage is not necessarily a benefit to you.
Yeah, especially if you're going to be. You know, if your risk tolerance level is low and you're going to be a fixed income investor, and as we've been talking about rates tonight, you know, rates are low and they're probably heading lower. So if you're going to be a fixed income investor, you know, that mortgage rate's probably going to be much higher than your income rate on a fixed income investment.
Yeah. Now, when we say low, we don't necessarily mean that, you know, some people think that they're going to go lower for longer is the phrase that's oftentimes used. We still wonder about all this money that's been printed and the rest. Mm. And so longer term, what's the risk right now? You know, inflation ticked up a little bit. Spending, you mentioned that earlier, GDP spending for the second quarter. The consumer is still healthy, spending a fair amount of money. But certainly there's debt, personal debt. Mortgages are at an all-time high, and people's debt levels that are really coming up to an all-time high. How long can they continue? It's really hard to say. So that's just an aside of where will rates go longer term. The question, I think you're right, just to wrap up the thing on retirement, it really depends on the situation.
Yeah, and, you know, to talk about other debt, I heard a statistic this morning on my way into the office that student loan debt is actually a larger part of the debt of the U.S. than mortgages.
That's crazy. In such a short
period of
time.
Which is insane to me. So I did not fact check that. I hope it's correct that what I heard. But yeah, so there's a lot of different kind of debt, but the two main types are fixed debt and variable debt. And variable debt is moving around as these interest rates change. So that's why looking at your credit card balances and your HELOC, like we've talked about, it's a great thing to have. It's not necessarily a great thing to use. It's definitely a great thing to have. But that's a variable rate loan. So if you have taken out money on a home equity line of credit, interest rates are going down, that's a good thing. If interest rates start peaking back up, it's a bad thing.
And in fact, if you took it out when you were getting a little subsidy because it was a write-off for taxes and it wasn't used to improve your home, then you're not getting that subsidy anymore. So that hurts. So again, before you take on debt, you really got to be careful with it. We talked about cars. Car debt's a little more expensive than it was, but still, you can, if your credit's good, you can go out and get a newer used car and get a loan at 2%.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
No, not bad at all, depending on what your credit ratings are, but maybe we'll hit that last tonight.
Yeah, sure.
So when we talk about personal debt and we're talking about personal finance, I think one of the biggest names in that category is Dave Ramsey, and he's a author and financial advisor and financial guru who wrote a book. The book is called The Debt Snowball, right? Or is it just the concept?
He may have. I haven't followed a lot of that. I'm familiar with his. You know, he is really the expert on just telling people just to emphasize, just get out of debt. Do whatever you have to do. You just got to get out of debt. And how do you do that? And just the pitfalls of debt.
So, Chris, you and I are both CPAs. We're accountants. We have a certain way of looking at the world. And Dave Ramsey actually has a very kind of contravision to how you pay off this debt with the debt snowball. Dave Ramsey's theory, kind of more based on psychology than accounting, is that you pay the lowest balances off first because that will get your snowball rolling.
Yeah.
If you pay off the little debts and you just see the number of things you need to pay down go down, that's going to have a positive effect on your psychology, and it's going to encourage you to keep doing it. So that's what he says. Don't worry about interest rate. Pay low balance first. That's always been a struggle for me as the accountant in me. You know, when I came out of school and I had, you know, student loans and maybe a car payment, it was about interest rates for me. But
sure.
And mathematically, that is the way it works better. But
sure.
Psychology is a big thing. And if you don't have the psychology, the math's not going to matter.
Yeah, but it's crazy what the interest rates are on credit cards, though. And the amount of credit card debt, I was just looking the other day, the amount of credit card debt is still, you know, really high.
Yeah.
It's still, I don't know, average household $7,000 of credit card debt. And I think on age, I think it was just age brackets where they were. It's just incredibly high. For people who are, you know, have issues, who can't really get to the point of paying it off, you always have consumer credit counseling services or a service like that.
Yeah, and I want to, you know, I think Consumer Credit Counseling Service of Maryland, which CCCS is actually a nationwide brand, and then they have kind of divisions in each state. You know, I'm sure they're a good organization. I have no intention to say anything negative about them. But what I do want to really encourage anyone who is considering utilizing one of these services is make sure you understand if they're getting paid, how they're getting paid.
Because sure.
even Consumer CCCS has a for-profit branch of itself called credit.org, which is just an interesting fact. I actually was checking on their website for that earlier. And that's the thing is, you know, so what do these guys do? There's two different really groups. So Consumer Credit Counseling Service is a counseling service. It's going to help work with you and the folks that you owe and mostly negotiate lower rates while you pay back the full amount you owe. There's another group of people out there that I think, you know, it's not necessarily always bad, but you have to definitely be a cautious consumer, which is these debt negotiators, you know, if you see the loan, you know, for every dollar you pay us, we'll reduce your debt by $2.64 or something like that. Well, they're getting paid. They're making a promise. And some of them are kind of using the law in an interesting way to make that allowed. It's not necessarily always successful. So, you know, just if you're going to look at, you know, some of especially those folks who say they're going to negotiate your debt away, just be a cautious consumer on that.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Okay, well, the clock waits for no man. And so we are at that point where we need to take another break for traffic. So we're going to do that and come back after that, wrap up the show. So take it away, traffic.
This is Drew Tignanelli, president of the Financial Consulate and host of Money, Riches, and Wealth. So often a radio listener calls me saying, I've been listening to you for years and have been meaning to call. When they come in for their comprehensive financial physical, they say, I wish I had done this years ago. If you've been meaning to call and meet with us, then do not wait. Call now to learn more about our trademark financial physical. The financial physical is designed to be a comprehensive second opinion analyzing all your goals and objectives. Are you maximizing tax efficiencies? Will you be able to maintain your lifestyle in retirement? Is your portfolio properly allocated? Are just a few of the many parts of the physical. The best part of our service is you get to see the final product before you decide if you want to pay for it. We do this to assure you we are not selling product, and we guarantee the physical to be truly beneficial. Do not wait any longer. Call 410-823-7283. That's 410-823-SAFE, or visit us online at financialphysical.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBS.
And if she should tell you, come closer. And if she tempts you with a chance, tell her no, no, no.
Okay, we are back. And we are here for the last 10 or so minutes of the show. Chris O'Shea and Michael McCarthy sitting in for Drew Tignanelli. And we're talking personal finance. And last subject we were on was we're talking debt. And so, Mike, from there, we're going to say we had another topic on that. We want to talk about bankrate.com.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same concept. It's, you know, mortgages or whatever else that you're dealing with interest rates. It's, you know, it can be a big expense. So shop it around. Mm-hmm. Bankrate.com is a fantastic place to shop for credit cards, mortgages, car loans, I believe. You know, you can even just get an idea if you're getting a quote from someone else for, hey, you know, you're at the car dealership. Hey, we can get you this great loan at 4.5%. You know, look at bankrate.com, see what others are getting and say, why is my rate, you know, higher if it's higher?
Yeah, I mean, we get very – some things you think, okay, this is nothing sexy about, you know, the topic. Well, we can tell you, specifically on bankrate.com, you can see who are the online banks who are paying higher rate of interest. We had people into our office a month or two ago, and they had a fair amount of cash – I mean, a fair amount of cash sitting in one of the big brick-and-mortar banks. And so we said, well, if you put that money – said, well, we don't like really go online with things. It's like, well, if you put that money – and earn 2%, they're going to earn $4,000 more in interest because it was $200,000 of cash that they had in just a brick-and-mortar savings account. And I said, okay, well, start with this. Do you do online banking? Do you do bill pay? It's like most people do. I said, so, okay, so just think of it from that standpoint. You're doing bill pay. You're online as it is. So
right.
All this is now your bank, you can set up an online bank. It's FDIC insured.
Right.
So it's as strong as what your brick-and-mortar bank is. You can tie a ACH connection right to your checking or savings account, so you can put money back within a day. It'll get there. It acts as a check, so it takes a couple days before you can get your hands on it. But it's that simple, and why would you not want to get 2% more than what you were getting before?
Yeah, absolutely. My wife and I do it. We have the bulk of our cash savings in an online bank, and then a little savings account just as a extra buffer in case I ever didn't pay attention to the checking account long enough, because that's what you need for the automatic coverage there. But
yeah,
that's a good way. I bet you that paid for the financial physical right there, didn't it?
Well, that sure. And then we had somebody, a young woman, come in. She had had some money set aside. It was growing. It was, you know, $15,000, $20,000, and she wanted to know how to invest it. And so we'll just ask some questions. It turns out she had some loans. She had a personal loan in addition to some educational loans. It's like, okay, well, what interest rates are you paying on these loans? And typically they're going to be higher. And so, I mean, will the markets give you a rate of return that can, you know, surpass what you're doing here? Well, possibly, but the type of investing we would suggest you do, most people, before you invest any money like that, you got to make sure you got to get rid of your debt because it doesn't make any sense. So in the end, it was, well, pay off your debt, because she was struggling. She was making some pretty good income 2 or 3 years out of college, but she was struggling to make ends meet because she had such high debt payments. It's like, well, here, use this money that's over here, pay off your debt.
Now,
give yourself some room, and now you can start saving.
Now, I'll throw in an added thing. So debt versus investment versus emergency fund.
Okay.
Because that's another thing, especially if you've got a family, but especially for younger people, less established.
Yep.
It's about, okay, so I've got some debt, I want to pay it off, but if that's all the cash you have, you're going to be totally naked if there's an emergency that comes along. So having a healthy emergency fund is good. But moving along, you know, Bankrate's a great website to shop for rates. But another website I know you guys have talked about before on the show is Mint.com. And one of the really neat things about Mint.com being free is it also, I believe once a month, updates your FICO credit score so that you can see how lenders are going to be looking at you, lenders and any credit offering company. And that's and what makes credit ratings important, you know, that's going to determine what interest rate you pay. The interest rates go up and down from the Federal Reserve and the markets, but, you know, it may go differently for you.
Right. That's again, you can get a 2% bank loan to buy a car if you've got a top level credit score.
Right. So Chris, what is what makes up those credit ratings?
I'm glad you asked that, Mike. so there's multiple things that do that. And so it's like people ask, well, what makes up – how do I know what my college, you know, expected family contribution is going to be? Well, there's component parts to that. We're told that 35% is payment history. So for people who say, well, you know, there's a grace period, you know, a couple of days, a week, or whatever. Well, sure, that's true, you know. But if you're paying early – that's going to help you. 35% says it's payment history. The amount of your overall debt is 30% of the equation of what your credit score. And we just saw a piece today in the paper that FICO is going to have another – it's going to be an alternative to the FICO score. FICO is still going to be there, but there'll be an alternative competing with that. But And 30% available credit. So total outstanding debt and available credit that you have. So it knows, are you using every dollar that you potentially have as credit? Length of credit history, 15%. How long have you been that's been established? And I like some ideas that some parents have for doing it for their kids while they're in college and they're establishing some credit for them rather than just kids getting credit cards and running them up the debt on those. The credit mix is 10%, and new credit is 10%. So in a nutshell, that's how it's broken out.
Yeah, and that length of credit history can be a real problem. I mean, I'm a stickler for cleaning up my money. So I always like to, I'm not using that credit card anymore. I've shopped and found a new credit card. But something that you really need to consider is if you've had a credit card a long time, you want to think twice before you close it out because that may be your oldest credit line, and that may shorten your credit history.
Yeah, good point.
The new credit is about how many applications you've sent in recently. So if everything looks good, but in the past month you've opened 10 credit cards, the 11th credit card company is going to go, well, wait a minute, what are you planning on? Did you get some bad health news, something like that? And then credit mix was actually a surprise to me, is that that credit mix is they want to see that you're using both revolving and revolving types of credit, as well as fixed types of credit like a mortgage.
Hmm. Makes sense.
So credit monitoring versus credit reporting is an interesting thing. So I talked about Mint.com. Them giving you your credit score is a form of credit reporting. But I know you guys, Chris, were you on the show when Drew was talking about the Equifax breach?
I was not. He had someone else on.
Okay. Well, I know that was discussed on the show. But, Equifax had a breach and they're offering a cash payment if you already have it, or they're offering free credit reporting for 4 years for all three bureaus and another six for them to give you 10. And some people who don't read it, read it a little too quickly or aren't reading it altogether, they jump to ask for that cash. Well, the cash is never going to be there, but that credit monitoring, having somebody watch for something that's irregular on your credit report, that's actually pretty valuable. And that's something that a lot of people should consider with all the identity theft today.
It is. In fact, even some credit card companies are pretty good about that. We've gotten calls at times to say, hey, we saw something that looked a little abnormal. Is that you? That's definitely a help. What else?
Well, Chris, I think one of the things that I've seen a lot of people go awry on is a lot of people have heard that you can get your credit report for free. And the worst thing in the world is they go and they Google free credit report. And I'll bet you the first six or seven items are actually not the free credit report website, right, though they look like they are.
Right.
We even had an employee one time who had accidentally signed up for this. And then when we pointed out that that's the wrong website, they checked their credit card, because they were asked to put in a credit card information to verify their identity, and they had some extra cards, extra charges. So annualcreditreport.com is the only actual free credit reporting site. And I have a mnemonic for remembering. I think it's called a mnemonic. Cheap-looking site, you got it right. So the credit bureaus were forced to create that website. They didn't, out of their own generosity, put an overt amount of money into the design of it.
Right.
So it's a pretty basic looking site, but it's got all three credit bureaus' names on it, and it's annualcreditreport.com. It's a big long report, shows all the credit lines that they can see in your history, shows if they're open or closed, shows the balances on them. So it's a great regular activity for people to do, to just look and see, hey, what do I still have out there?
Yeah, that's a great thing. And, you're talking about Mint.com, a little bit of an offshoot of this, but one of the things that I like Mint.com and others like it is that you can do a personal cash flow statement. We're talking about personal finance. That's something that – use a credit card for everything. And then when it comes down, you can classify. So it's just a really good help. And, Mike, we're out of time.
Oh, that went fast.
It went really fast. We appreciate you joining us next week. Drew Tignanelli will be back in studio, and so we wish you a good week until then. Good night.
Good night.